The Sefer names through Parsha Freimshir for Parshas Miketz. We'll be looking at the Sefer Masas Binyamin by Rav Binyamin Aaron Salnik, who lived from 1550 to 1620. The phrase Masas Binyamin comes up in the Parsha in Perek Mem Gimel, Pasuk Lamedalid, where it refers to Vayisa Masos Meiz Panav Alehem, Atere Masas Binyamin Masos Kulam Chamish Yados, that Yosef had portions brought to the brothers, and Binyamin's portion was five times larger as the portions of any of them. And Rashi says that Masas refers to Monos, in Targum Onkelos, a portion. We don't know too much about Rav Binyamin Aaron Salnik, but we know that he was a student of the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, and Rav Shlomo Luria, the Marshal. He was a contemporary of the Maran Lublin, and of the authors of the Sma and the Levush. He was considered to be one of the greatest Torah scholars of his generation in Poland. The Shalosh Chuvos Masas Binyamin contains 112 responsa, which was first printed in Krakow in 1633. His son was Rav Yaakov Salnik, who authored the Sefer Nachlas Yaakov. And in the Hagdamah to the Nachlas Yaakov, he writes that he called it Nachlas Yaakov for three reasons, but two of them are, number one, because he felt like his learning was a nachla, was an inheritance from his father, the Masas Binyamin, who taught him so much. And number two, he says he never had any male children to give over an actual nachala. We know one's learning, one's Maisim Tovim, are able to be passed on as well. So we'll quote several limudim from the Masas Binyamin. The first one is related to a halacha about Hasagas Gvul, about competition amongst businesses. So the Ramah in the Tshuva in Simen Yud deals with a famous 16th century debate between two Italian publishers who both printed editions of the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. So the one who published it first complained that the rival should be unable to publish it as well. It would put him out of business. And the Ramah actually ruled in favor of the first publisher based on the ruling of the Aviasaf that everyone forbids opening a store if it will certainly ruin the business of the first store owner. The Masas Binyamin in Simen Chav Zayin, and this is quoted by the Pisrei Tshuva and Choshen Mishpat in Simen Kuf Nun Vav, he deals with a shayla of a town that was only permitted to have one store of a certain type. And one of those stores already existed, but another owner wanted to open up the exact same type of store. So the Masas Binyamin writes that everyone agreed it's usur, since there's not a chance that both stores could survive. So the damage is certain, like the Ramah. However, if there's a chance that both stores could survive, it would be mutter. So when you apply that practically, when you talk about pizza stores opening up in Jewish neighborhoods, if it has to be determined if the town can sustain, even as a chance, two pizza stores. If the one will definitely have to close, then it would be usur. If not, then it seems like it'd be mutter. The Pisrei Tshuva also quotes the Chassam Sofer in the Tshuva, who says that if the second store opening will only decrease the profits of the first store, it can still open, as that's called competition in business. It should be noted that the Chassam Sofer says that we do not take into account the financial situation of the first store owner, as even if he's already a wealthy guy, and so his store being shut down, he won't be asking for food on the street, it's still usur to open a competitive store if that store will cause the first one to shut down. Rav Howard Jachter, in an article, quotes that Rav Soloveitchik ruled that in America, there are no restrictions on competition, and a second store can always open up in any location. That's one limud from the Masas Binyamin. Number two, with respect to standing for Kriyas HaTorah, so the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, Simen Kuf Mem Vav, the Mechava writes that one does not need to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. The Ramah says some are machmir like the Maharam, but the Luvush and others explain this is based on the fact that even the Gemara seems to say that one has to do Amida for Kriyas HaTorah, that Amida refers to shtika. It just means to be quiet, which is also an important halacha to keep in mind, but that there's not an actual halacha to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. However, the Eliyarabba quotes from the Sefer Masas Binyamin, and this is after the 112 Tshuvos. He has Chidushei Dinim in the back. He has one page on Orach Chaim with several osos, several numbers. This is the first one, that even those who sit for Kriyas HaTorah certainly need to stand during the Aliyah, when the Ola says Baruch Hu Hashem Amavorach, and everyone answers Baruch Hashem Vrach Liyom Va'ed, since that's a Davar Shebek Dusha. The Taz also writes that way. But that's not like the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham over there writes that one has to stand the entire Birchas HaTorah. The Mishnah Brura and the Shaar HaTzion points out that we paskin, like the Levush, the Aliyah Rabbah, the Masas Binyamin, that one does have to stand for the Aliyah, but only during Baruchu and the response of Baruch Hashem Rachel Amvaed, not like the Magen Avraham. But the Piskei Tshuvos notes that it seems to be black and white halacha in the Mishnah Brura, based on the Masas Binyamin, and yet there are many outstanding Jewish people who keep halacha and who don't stand for the bracha of the Ola, not for Baruch Hu, etc. So what's that based on? Is there any justification? So he says yes, because Rav Chaim Vital in the Shara Kavanos, which was a recording of many of the Minhagim of the Arizal, he testified about the Arizal that he wouldn't stand for any part of Kriyas HaTorah, seemingly even for Baruch Hu, even for the Ola. And that actually is consistent, said the Piskei Tshuvos, with the opinion of several poskin and Simin Nunvav in Or HaChaim, that one is actually not chayev to stand for a Davar Sheh B'Kedusha unless he's already standing. And so therefore, if one's sitting for Kriyas HaTorah, he wouldn't have to then get up and stand for the Aliyah. Again, even according to the Mishnah Brura, once the Ola starts saying Asher Bachar Banu, one does not have to be standing. So seemingly it's best to be standing for the bracha of the Ola, at least the beginning part, Baruch Hu, and the response, according to the Masas Binyamin, as the poskim do quote. However, there is justification based on the Arizal. Number three, the issue of wearing a hat, let's say a black hat, on Shabbos in a place without an Eruv. If there's a concern that the hat may blow off, and if it blows off, one may come to carry it, Da'ad Amos in Rishus HaRabim. So the Shulchan Aruch in Simon Shin Aleph writes that a person may not wear a hat on Shabbos outdoors because the hat may blow away. But the Mishnah Brura over there says we're talking about a case that the hat is worn over a yarmulke, so that even if the hat blows away, he's not going to remain bareheaded. That's the concern. So that you may come to go to the hat and then carry the hat, because you're still wearing a yarmulke. But if one would be embarrassed to walk without a hat on his head, let's say he's not wearing a yarmulke under the hat, then we're not concerned about the possibility of carrying the hat because you need to put it on your head. So the Masas Binyamin, in the Chiddushei Dinim in the back, he notes that the Mechaber over there in Shin Aleph, in Sif Katan Yudalid, writes that you can't wear a hat over a mitznefes to protect from rain, unless it's very tight around the head. Implication being, says the Masas Binyamin, that a hat on top of a head, we're not concerned, even if it's not so tight. Why? Because obviously a person's not going to walk four amos without his hat. And the Beis Yosef also echoes this. So it sounds like in a place where no one walks without a hat, so we're not concerned if it blows off, you'll walk without it. So he says, nowadays our hats go deep, they're very tight, so it should be mutter. Magen Avraham quotes his Masas Binyamin, that in a place where people don't walk around without a hat, there's no concern to wear one, because if it blows off, you won't come to carry it. So Rav Akiva Neuhaus in of the Chicago Community Kollel, he notes that there are several heterim to allow wearing a hat on Shabbos over a yarmulke in a place without an Eruv. Number one, if it fits firmly tight on your head. Number two, the Aruch HaShulchan says it's only an issue if you're walking in a real Rishus HaRabim, but a Carmelis, which many of our locations are, would be mutter. But the Mishnah Brura actually argues and says that it would not be a heter for a Carmelis. But like we said, if you're in a location that everyone wears their hat outside, and you are makbid to always wear your hat outside, then you could even wear it, because when it blows away, if you go to get it, you're not going to be caught dead not wearing your hat. So we're not concerned you'll be carrying it, Da'ad Amos, Rishus HaRabim. That's another limit of the Masas Binyamin. Number four, in respect to beating the Hoshanos. So the Mechaber says that we bang the Hoshanos on the ground, on the karka, or on a kli, two or three times. And the Levush quotes this. The Liyarabah quotes from the Masas Binyamin in the Chiddushei Dinim at the end of the Sefer, that it's clear from the Zohar and Parshas Tzav that we want to specifically bang it on the ground. And the Sefer Tolas Yaakov writes his way as well. Why? Because we want to wipe away the bad din, so that we're not sentenced to Misa and be lowered to the earth. So we bang on the earth as if to say that we do not want to have a bad din. We don't want to end up in the earth. And the Eliyahu Rabbah adds that perhaps when we bang it on utensils, on chairs, on table first, to get rid of some of the leaves, and then we bang it on things in the shul to get rid of the Nitzotze Hadin, and then we bang it on the floor to be Messiah the Yemei Hadin. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Arizal, which many of us have the minhag to do, which is we do it specifically on the ground, and we do it five times. It says best to do it first five times on the ground, and then on a kli to get rid of the leaves. And we know you don't have to get rid of all the leaves, even though children like to do that. And the Shaar HaTzion notes in the Bikur Yaakov, you should specifically do it in that order. First, bang it five times on the ground, and only then bang it on the kli and get rid of more leaves. Why? Because if you bang it on a kli first, let's say a chair or a table, and most of the leaves already come off, so now that's a pasul arava. So when you bang the arava on the ground, you're being mekayim a mitzvah. You need to have a kosher arava at that point. So that has to have the requisite amount of leaves. That's why the Mishnah Berurah tells us, Bikur Yaakov says, to first bang it on the ground five times, and then if you want to get rid of additional leaves to symbolize that you're getting rid of more of the bad din, so then you can do it, but as long as you have a kosher arava at the time when you want to bang it on the ground. And finally, a fifth liman, which is very, very interesting, which is the very first tshuva in the Masas Binyamin is regarding the following shayla. There was a minhag in some places that on Erev Shabbos, a baker would bake a very large dough, let's say a 20-pound dough, and let's say four women would each come and take off of that dough 5 pounds and go bake that in their house. And the shayla was, and they'd be mafresh challah from that. And the shayla was, do they have a chiv hafrasha? And if you only have, if you have one big dough, only one chiv hafrasha is required from that big dough. And yet here, you have four women, which, yes, it's true, they all are all taking the shir challah, but they're all doing the hafrasha. Is that okay? And then part two of that shayla was he noted that sometimes at weddings what they would do is they would have a very large dough that a baker would make. Each woman would come and be mafresh, let's say a 20-pound dough, four women would come and be mafresh shir challah, but then they would put the dough back in the big pile. The baker would bake the big 20-pound challah as one challah, and then after it was baked as a whole challah, they would divide up the freshly baked challah to the women. And is that okay? Is that a chiyuv hafrasha? So, as background here, very interesting, listen to a shir by Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, it's on Yom Torah, that actually I asked the shayla, so he quotes my wife's shayla, which is that can a woman on Friday, can she bake dough, let's say 5 pound dough, but only bake, let's say, a couple challahs and freeze the rest of the dough? Is there a chiyuv hafrasha when one will not be baking all the dough at the same time? So what this really boils down to is the Mishnah Meseches Challah in Perek Aleph Mishnah Zayin, which talks about that if a baker makes a dough with the intention to divide it up, that's still chayev and challah. But if a woman gives their dough to a baker and the baker kneads it into one big dough and then will give it back to them as freshly baked challah, such a dough is pater from challah. So right away, Masas Binyamin has the answer to question number two. With respect to the wedding, he says, we should definitely protest on this minhag, because it's very clear from the Mishnah and Challah that if a baker bakes a big dough, and then you take some dough, to mafresh challah, but then give him back the dough to put into the big dough, and you only get pieces of it, so then that's not a chiyuv hafrasha. That's not okay. But the Yerushalmi says something called an isa kedei lechalik is pater. Shulchan Aruch also passing it this way, that if one makes a dough with the intention to divide it, so it's pater. What's the reason for that? So either because maybe we view it that it already doesn't have a shir challah because you're planning on dividing it, or other reasons. But how do we define kedei lechalik? So the Pesachei Tshuva says, one opinion would be, distinction is if you plan to give it to other people, that's kedei lechalik. If you keep it yourself, then that's okay. And that seems to be, Rabbi Liwa said, that seems to be an important minhag that we all follow. There's other opinions as well. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes the Madani Melech, who says that it means if you don't plan to bake it all at the same time, bake some of the dough now, put other parts of the dough away and freeze it, maybe that would be pater as well. So, Rishon Zalman seems to hold like the third approach, quoting Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. So, only mafresh without a bracha. So therefore, in a case where a woman would be baking challahs, only baking some, and freezing the rest of the dough, Rishon Zalman would say not to make a bracha. Rabbi Leibowitz said that Rav Vosner and others seem to argue and say that really we go with the first approach, that as long as one is not giving it out to others, you can make a bracha even when you're freezing some of the dough. So now what about the Masas Binyamin's first shayla? About a baker who makes a 20-pound dough, And then women come and take from him, let's say four women each come and take 5-pound pieces that are mafrish. Is that okay? So Masa B'Yamin says that if Isa Kedel Chalik, if the das of the baker, if it works to pater a person in Hafreshes Chala, it can also work to say a chi of chala, meaning you have a 20-pound dough, but the baker has in mind when he bakes it to divide it into four portions. So then when each woman comes and takes from that big dough, and she can do afrasha, as the das of the baker to divide actually creates the chi of afrasha. And Masav Yaman says, not only do we have to be concerned for this minug in a negative way, we should actually be encouraging women to do this. As we know, it's a very big inyan for women to bake challah Erev Shabbos, but it's a tremendous tircha. So if we have bakers who bake very large doughs, having in mind that women can take from those doughs and just put them in the oven right away, so then that will encourage women to do that and make a big dough every single Shabbos to make challah. And maybe this will encourage women to do this, and if not, that we're going to teach women, oh, it's a tircha, maybe they'll stop doing the mitzvah altogether. And therefore the Masas of Binyamin is very for this first minhag that he quotes, of a baker local in the community baking a 20-pound dough, having in mind to sell 5-pound portions of it, and when each woman comes and takes the 5-pound portion, she'll be able to make the bracha of afrasha and do the bracha, because that was his mind. Isak del Chalik is not only a patur of challah, but in this situation, it actually creates the chiyuv of challah based on the das of the baker. This is a little bit about Rav Binyamin Aaron Salnik and his very important sefer, Masas Binyamin.